Great fun on a Thursday. Great to have you back with us through the spring. Dr. Turf, good morning to you.
Half, Whitey. I don't think the Cox Plate's hyphenated, by the way. yes, nice to be here. And always an exciting race, the Plate.
My word. Are you excited about this edition?
It's an interesting edition.
Well, there's a pause there.
It's an interesting edition. Like, I think you can make a case for and against virtually every runner. A couple of unknowns, of course, with Europeans and the two of the three favourites, maybe coming off, you know, interesting runs, you know, in Zaki and very elegant, probably not at their best at their previous start. So there's a bit of intrigue about the race.
That makes it a bit of fun, doesn't it?
I know we're talking to the Babe, of course, who rode the 79. Well, he rode a few Cox Plate winners, but Dulcifying 79 was one that stuck out in my mind.
Why? We'll get to that later. Why? It's all right.
Yeah, but just as a an aside, I think I'm right in remembering on the day, there was when we were kids, one of the books that all schoolboys read was a book called Reach for the Sky, which was the story of an English pilot who lost his legs, was given tin legs, and then fought in the war.
Right.
And his name was Douglas Bader, or Bader. I actually made a movie of it. It was one of those famous English sort of war movies.
Yep.
And he was at that Cox Plate in 1979.
Right.
And I'm sure I met him, but I don't really remember. You know, it was so long ago. But I'm just that I'm saying idolized him.
Was he a big
a
fan
kid.
Of you at the time?
Did he take your numbers in the quote?
I just not too many. I don't really remember, but you know, he was such an icon for young fellas back in the day. It was such a famous book.
You think if you lost your legs in the war, you'd just put up your hand and say, that's it for me. I'm out.
Well, no, he just...
He lost a bike. Did he lose a bike before the war or in the war?
No. He certainly got... I think he got shot down as well. And, you know, seriously, like, it was one of those amazing boys' own books, you know, that I read when I was a kid. And got to see him at the Cox Plate, that same Cox Plate that...
Was he British?
Yes,
he was a pump. British version of Ben Simmons for us here.
He's a big punter, punter the punter fan. He was. He loved to see the doc in action.
He was, yeah. But I'm just trying to think who played him in that movie. It was one of those famous English black and white war movies, you know, in the '60s.
So every boy read that. Is that what you're telling me?
I reckon every kid my age, you know, read Reach for the Sky.
I want to know off the SMS, 0416 905052, if you are of Turf's age, and there's probably not many left, let's be honest. did you read Reach for the Stars? Reach for the Sky.
Douglas Bader, his name was. Mm-hmm. And he was probably played by, you know, one of those famous English actors as well, whose name... I can't remember either. Look it up. I probably should have looked it up.
Have you had a glass of milk today?
I've had a coffee on the way in.
Well, you need some more milk because new research led by the University of Melbourne at Austin Health has found elderly adults...
You're right.
...who eat 3.5 serves of dairy daily have a 33% lower chance of any type of fracture, a 46% lower risk of hip fractures, and 11% reduction in falls, Turf.
Falls.
You're getting into that sort of time of life. I'm concerned about you. Just keep the dairy up if you can.
What is that benchmark age where it goes from I fell over to I had a fall?
That's right.
There is a benchmark age where the description alters.
I think it's 70.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I think it's 70.
Is it?
Yeah, and usually in a nursing home where you get the phone
call.
Right,
yeah.
Means that's good. So that means that is Viennetta on a stick. they're healthy. They're good for you.
Good for you.
I'm going to look it up while I'm talking.
Kenneth Moore.
Famous English actor.
He's your man.
That played all those sorts of roles.
Joe from Box Hill knew that.
On you, Joe. Thanks for that.
Oh, good luck. Joe, well done. He was shot down and captured and made a prisoner of war.
There you go. Well, I forgot all of that.
He escaped so many times, says somebody off the SMS. Stand by before I get to the end of this message. The Germans took his legs off him. So,
well, that's one.
That's
way.
A story.
He was a good rugby player from another SMS as well.
Hard to tackle.
well, it's probably before the league.
Yeah, what's that old English? You know, there's that old joke about the... bloke who lost his legs in an accident, and he was given wooden legs, and he got a job as a night watchman in a factory. And the family got a phone call one night saying, "Better come down, the factory's on fire." So they went down there, and the fire chief said, look, we've saved the factory, but your uncle's burnt to the ground. Never heard that joke.
I've never heard that joke.
Probably for good reason.
I've never heard that joke. Yes, good morning to all.
There's an old English comedian named Jethro, who I think's retired, and when you look at him on YouTube and stuff...
Drinks a lot of milk.
He does stuff that you're probably not kosher these days.
There's not much that's kosher these days.
But he was very funny by the same token.
Yes.
And that was one of his jokes.
Right. How did we get the Ben Simmons before with the magic legs?
So what's happened there?
Well, he seems to have the same sort of heart, doesn't he?
What?
Well, he just doesn't want to get involved with the team he plays for and training with his mobile phone.
That was horrible yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because remember, you were talking just momentarily about Aaron Rodgers, who seemed to be wanting out of the Packers big time, played the first game. They got flogged in the first game of the season. But he's just put on a clinic since
then. Well, it was debated that he might even turn up again after round one because he was it seemed so disinterested. Well, haven't lost since.
Yeah, no one had no idea what to expect from the Packers in game two. But wow, he's back in that Super Bowl winning form of his.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he must be 15 years in now.
Yeah, Rodgers. He's getting to that point. Yeah.
What a career he's had.
There's a lot of SMSs coming in saying that they read that book.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it was almost compulsory reading, you know, back in the day for young boys.
Wasn't on the curriculum, was it? The
As
school book
to
list.
Man. Sorry?
Wasn't on the school book list at the start of the year, was it?
No, it wasn't, but it was just a famous war book, English book. Nice. I'm not saying I've still got it, but I still remember reading it and how popular it was. And there he was at the Cox Plate in 1979.
What was his name?
Sir Douglas Bader. Who's Bader.
Who'd be the most famous person you've ever met?
Without a word of a lie, George Bush.
Right.
Senior.
How did that happen?
Well, I was with, on a family holiday, and I was with my wife.
I mean, Benella Trotts one night.
Yeah, that's right. I was in Singapore, on route somewhere, and when we arrived at the airport, there was sort of army lining the roads everywhere, and it turned out there was some sort of huge conference on in Singapore, world leaders. We didn't know that at the time, and we arrived at the hotel and we'd go for a dip just to, you know, clean up and everything, and caught the wrong lift. Basically got on the goods lift instead of the other, you know, we're sort of a bit lost. And the lift doors opened, and this arm came across and said, wait there. So my wife and I, in our bathers, are standing in this lift, and around the corner, first of all, came Barbara.
Oh, yes.
And then following on was George. And he saw my wife and I in the lift in our togs and walked over and said, hi there, how are you doing? And shook our hands.
Did he?
Went the shake. And he was the president of the US at the time. And the very next day, gained some sort of notoriety by vomiting on the Japanese prime minister. At this particular conference. He did. Yeah. He had some sort of food poisoning or whatever. And it's an unusual expression, to vomit on the Japanese prime minister. That is a hand on my heart, 100% true story.
Is there any suggestion that that was a direct reaction to seeing you in your togs?
It's possible. It's possible, Daniel. Maybe he'd been to Big Short's Bar and Grill in Greensboro.
It's opening up Friday again.
I bet it is.
For 20 patrons, go and see Mabel Jones.
When's the last time you worked behind the counter there?
Well, last time it was open was about 20 months ago, so it was a while before that.
Wow, yeah.
So we're like, go and see Mabel. So, give her a visit, 67 Griffith Street.
And that was quite a famous incident when he lost his breakfast or dinner. but anyway, so that's, I would say he was the most famous person. Not that I did meet him, I suppose, but...
you did, you shook his hand.
Yeah, I shook his hand.
That's officially a meeting.
Hardly had a chin wag, but... Hi there, how you doing? And I thought it was his grandmother.
Poor old Babs.
Well,
poor old Barbara. Such a very, very loyal person.
Right-o.
Supportive person.
Why did you mention the dairy thing?
Just because Turfy's just, old.
It was an age thing.
It was an age gag. Well, I saw that this morning. And I thought, dairy's important.
But did you see that the Queen's been sort of under a bit of pressure?
What's happened to Lizzie?
No, because the Queen's minders have told her that she can't drink her martini every night.
Really?
That she's getting a bit old, or that it might not be particularly healthy. Have you ever seen a more healthy looking and sounding 95-year-old?
I'm not a royalist by any stretch, but she is a remarkable woman. She seriously is. There's a bit of longevity in that crew, isn't there? Yeah. You know, Philip, how old was he?
Well, Philip was 98. When
he was shooting quail up till he was at 98. And the Queen Mother,
was 100 and something, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
She got to 100. Yeah, she was batting well. He was 99, Prince Philip, when he passed earlier this year. And the Queen Mother, I'll find out that for you. She's been asked to step down for a couple of days. I've just been told, two out the back. That's a brave person telling the Queen to just have a sit after all these years. Just sit this one out, love.
It'd be the same person that told her that she's got to stop drinking.
Martinis. Well, the Queen Mother, of course, was very fond of gin.
101 Queen Mother got to.
Van Ingham. Okay, it's good age.
They're going well. The palace life's good.
Not exactly sort of a gruelling existence, is it?
Well, I don't know. I reckon they do a lot of stuff. A lot of functions. Oh,
a lot of opening, a lot of cutting of ribbons. A lot of functions.
Quail shooting isn't easy, Turf.
Who?
Quail shooting.
No.
It's not easy. I reckon they work pretty hard, the royals. Mm. They're out there. They're out there doing their thing.
Yeah.
Come on, Turf.
It's $10 million a year to open a
building. Well, I didn't say it wasn't worthwhile, but I reckon they're on the horse a bit. Because, of course, William and Kate are doing the majority of all this sort of stuff.
I try not to follow the royal, you know, fracas and the family issues between the...
It's hard keeping up, Turf.
Yeah, well, you just follow whatever Piers Morgan's got to say about it, don't you, and assume his position.
Now, tell me yesterday, Turf, Charlie Rose won the Geelong Cup. Yeah. Is Charlie Rose a contender in the Melbourne Cup?
I wouldn't have thought so, but she's a terrific mare, and they've done a great job with her, and she puts herself on pace, and she's always hard to beat in her races, and she did a great job. She had a good preparation, and she'd be cherry ripe for the big one, but... what a great track that was yesterday. I know I go on about this, and I did last week.
Well, this is why he's here. He loves this man, James Dalton, who sets the track up there.
We are blessed. And when you look at some of those Sydney tracks, those poor blokes got to put up with punting on those Sydney tracks. They can have their Everest, but any danger of throwing some money into an infrastructure there on a racetrack in Sydney, that's enough.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Everest, the Manikato has been affected by that.
Oh, yeah.
There's been a lot of conversation.
Yeah, there's an issue now.
Even Michael Brow mentioned this on Racing Pulse or the barrier draw the other day at Moonee Valley. Like, there's admission from everyone now that it's affecting things.
Well, it's certainly affected. I'm sure. In fact, I think I read the turnover last Saturday was through the roof.
Yeah, it was.
And I'm sure this is the fact that Melbourne and Sydney combined have got a huge race day with the Caulfield Cup and the Everest on the same day. And there's some disappointments for me in that you're not going to have the top Sydney jockeys in Melbourne and the Sydney horses stay up there and for races like that. And what's that race next? The Derby? The Golden Eagle, is it? I still think there's some fine tuning that needs to be done because there is a downside to the whole thing. And worth noting also that some of the other Sydney money that has been thrown at some races has been the greatest slaughter of cash in the history of racing. When you look at the Hill Stakes, you know, that's just a farce what he's doing with some of those, trying to keep horses away from the Turnbull. And, you know, it needs to be pointed out that some of the stuff he's doing is a clumsy failure.
Yeah. See, I'm interested, we were talking to Mark Waugh yesterday on RSN Central, and we were talking about the Caulfield Cup and also the Everest on the same day. And Mark was pretty flat that it was on the same day because he loves the Caulfield Cup as much as, you know, he's enjoying the Everest. But he was saying that in Sydney, no one's talking about the Caulfield Cup. It was all about the Everest. Mm. Whereas down here,
you know,
we do talk about the Everest.
Yeah, we do. Well, actually, a little bit too much probably. But, I mean, obviously a lot of that coverage, particularly in the Sydney newspapers, was paid for.
Yes.
So, you know, there is that. There was a story, definitely a story going around a couple of years ago that Sky presenters were instructed not to talk about the Caulfield Cup. Now, whether that was...
That was a story at the time,
There was a story at the time. So you'd hate to think that sort of pettiness had, you know, been an instruction from, you know, those in power up north.
Yeah. See, I'm interested in what you thought of Incentivise, of all the races that you've watched over time, and, you know, the comparisons potentially between someone like a Might and Power and an Incentivise, the field that Incentivise beat. From what you saw on Saturday, where does this horse potentially compare
good
with
question.
Others?
I said to you last week, the Turnbull won me over. I mean, he was the real deal after what he did, I thought, in the Turnbull. I mean, he was it the best cup field? You know, that's debatable last week, but he flogged them. You know, everything he did, his sexuals, everything was a dominant performance. He would have beaten any field they put up against him last week. I thought he was fantastic. You know, he copped that penalty. I know it wasn't, you know, he still only had 55 or whatever it was, but he annihilated that field as pure and simple. So I think he's capable of anything, really. I mean, it'll be a different kettle of fish at Flemington. In that there will be international runners, some international runners, so it'll be a different feel to what he took on at Caulfield, and he's got an extra kilo and a half, which was exactly right, I would say. He's won me over. He's a star.
Right.
He is a fair dinkum star.
So we heard, spoke to Richo the other day on Breakfast with
Shiny
the Best.
Head.
Yeah, Shiny Head. He was talking about, we threw him the question about the lack of internationals this year and whether or not it franks it, it makes it a better performance or a less than stellar performance because there's no real international competition for Incentivise this time around. What's camp do you sit in? Do you need internationals to make it a great race and the performance great, or are you happy with the local scene?
Well, you're asking if I made to put myself in here. I mean, I...
Well, Richard, I was saying, just for reference, he was saying without the internationals, it's a really, like, it's a great performance and it's a really nice Caulfield Cup and all that sort of stuff. But without these internationals and their form lines, it takes away a little bit of the gloss.
I think that is true. And really, you know, I'm just speaking as a punt. I mean, the standard of our stays is not strong. And look, I mean, I grew up and loved the Melbourne, and still love the Melbourne Cup, and it was my favourite race and my favourite day of the year. You didn't know any better, though. You didn't. I mean, the only horses you didn't know about were the Kiwis coming over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm talking about, obviously, 20-odd years ago and beyond, but, you know, I'll go back in racing a while. And it was such a fantastic race and an iconic, egalitarian sort of race, and it was Australia's best days and the queries from New Zealand. But I think we've been exposed to just the standard of what our stayers are. And I don't think that's ever going to change, by the way. I mean, you can send Melbourne Cup winners to stud and so forth, but that doesn't mean anything, really. You know, they're probably not going to be great stallions, A, and B, who's going to send a decent broodmare to them? Come on, we're geared for speed here. That's our shtick here in Australian horse racing. And I'm not undermining the cup for one second, but I think if it was just for Australian and New Zealand bred horses, you know, I don't know where it would sit. Mm. I mean, back in the day, it was number one, but I don't think it'd ever sort of be considered like that anymore. So I do think you need that mix of...
It legitimises our horses if they can compete against the best international horses.
Yeah. But do you want 17 of them in the field?
No, I don't think you do.
So I don't know what the balance is.
Well, we're buying more as well, too, as ownership groups and syndicates are buying more of these overseas ones and bring them here for this reason because the cash is so good.
I mean, you look
at... So we're seeing a lot of them as locals in the end anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. You wonder where we'd be. Really, when you look at... You could pull out a race field from Flemington in May in the 2,500-metre staying race there, and probably 8 of the 10 were internationals.
We did this the other day with Dino on the Friday form. It was one of the, I can't remember which race it was, but it was 2,400 or so.
Yeah.
And two of the 14 were Australia or New Zealand suffixes.
So where would you be? Our race, you know, it's almost like, do you just abandon? I'm not saying, I'm just, you know.
No, because I've got a derby contender.
Where would you be? We're just sprint racing. I mean, we are 1,200 to 1,000 metres to 2,000 metre racing. You know, the staying races on the day are always the least interesting, and the least depth in them. You know, we're struggling for numbers during the year, even with most of the stuff. Yeah, occasionally you get your bigger fields, but often they're racing on the Saturday with seven or eight horses. But that's just, that's our racing.
But interestingly,
that is our racing.
That's where the money is, all the staying races.
Yeah, that's exactly that. It's still good money to be won.
24 past seven on a Thursday morning. Great to have Dr. Turf as part of the team through the Spring Carnival on a Thursday. It is good business as far as we're concerned. There's a bit more to talk about. Not too far away, Kevin Sheehan, Jeff Ogilvie, and Brent Thompson, the babe, for Doc's favourite Cox plates.
You've joined The Breakfast Club.
His work has been superb Saturday, and his work was superb yesterday at the Valley. That combined with James McDonald back in the plate, you know, he's the best jockey in Australia, and he's prepared to go and spend a week in isolation to ride my horse.
That's a pretty good endorsement, I reckon. 29 past 7 on a Thursday morning. That's the voice of Annabelle Neesham speaking about James McDonald, who will be taking the sit on Zaki in the WS Cox Plate on Saturday, having to go through 7 days of isolation to do it. Turf, she's got two in the race, Annabelle. She's going gangbusters. Monga
as well.
Is the other one?
Yeah. And, well, Zaki's sort of obviously a last start failure at Caulfield, just like Dulcify was before he won the Cox Plate by seven lengths.
That's your favourite.
It is funny, Caulfield, how it's been the graveyard for some champions. They handle every course, but Caulfield's one that they can't. And most famously, Kingston Town, I reckon. I'm going to say, you think I've beaten there.
So you're not too distressed about Zaki's last start failure?
Distress. I haven't lost any sleep over it. well, yeah, you've got to... You know, every horse puts in a bad one every, you know, as a refined athlete like yourself.
Correct.
You probably put the odd short one in half.
Wow, there was once. There was one.
So, you know, it's not ideal, but, you know, they're not machines.
Well, but that's what the, I mean, the punters.
You're asking me to want to cop 280 about him? Not really.
No. Well, there you go. That was my next question. You're copping 280.
No.
Not on the back of that?
No.
Right.
I don't mind having a bet. I don't know if you're aware of that. But I can't convince myself of a horse I want to back in the Cox Plate.
Right. It's got to that point.
Yeah. I mean, I like the fact that Very Elegant has drawn nine because I think that suits her having to go back and there's going to be a bit of rain. There's going to be... It'll be race 17, if you like, in a day and a bit. So what's it going to be like?
What's the millage for the coming days?
15, 20, I think.
Well, up to 10 on Friday and Saturday. So
it probably puts 6 or 7 on the track anyway, so it's only plus 10.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. The thing with Mooney Valley is you're talking about tracks. I mean, we know that it can take rain.
Yeah, yeah. But I can't convince myself to back her either. I mean, isn't that funny? If you had a debate about is she a champion, if you want to throw that expression out there, that well-worn one, nine-time Group 1 winner?
Yep.
There's still a, you know, like...
Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. She never puts them away.
But she never really runs a bad race either.
Neither. You know, and she knows, I mean, she knows where the finishing line is.
You know, that's all you need to do.
Yeah, she's got a tremendous... I mean, you know, if they're head and head, she normally wins, don't they? Doesn't she? So I can't convince myself to back her. You know, Animo's just... Does he go forward on Animo from that awkward draw? I suppose so.
You'd be posy handy, wouldn't you?
So with the three-year-olds, Animo and Cap Devant, I don't know. It's a intriguing race.
Well, that's fun. I like races that are intriguing. There shouldn't be a clear-cut WS Cox Plate winner, should there?
I say, of all the, you know, obviously being in the racing meeting, having the pass and so forth, but standing down near where the horses come back, where I think I've watched 25 Cox Plates from, on the ground level, down by the scales, is one of the great experiences. And I suspect it's just as good up in the stands. You know, it's a great... I hope when they rejig the Valley that they designed it in such a way, and I'm sure they'll keep that in mind, that atmosphere, that amphitheatre atmosphere is replicated.
Somehow replicated, yeah.
It's one of those great, you don't get it at Caulfield or Flemington, but you get it at the Valley.
Well, you're right there, aren't you?
It's because we've talked about this a number of times, Half. It's because when because the mounting yard's out the back, the horses come through the tunnel and then come straight out onto the track. So there's that drum, and they usually have that music that plays as well.
Yeah, Daryl.
No. They have this. Well, I don't know whether they even have it anymore. The
Brownlow sort of
music.
Stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of a bit like that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sing it, but I know it. But it just, you get the, it's spine tingling because it's always signifies they're ready to race as they go through the tunnel and the crowd's on top of them.
And it's really the only track, I'm thinking, I think it's the only track in Australia that has that proximity, that, you know, immediacy for the crowd. They're actually sort of part of the pre-parade and that noise up the straight the first time and then in the home straight is spine chilling.
It is going to be a great day, no doubt. All the action, of course, on RSN 927 through the weekend, and more discussion about that through the next couple of days. I'm an anemoman, I think.
I beg your pardon?
An anemoman.
Anemoman.
I think I'm an anemoman.
I
think you want to hyphenate that too.
Well, we're talking about Doc's favourite Cox plate a little bit later on, and with Brent Thompson after 8 o'clock. Don't go anywhere about that. That's where I'm going at the moment, Turf. See how we go.